Welcome once again to the Arts Alive podcast from the St. Pete Catalyst. My name is Bill DeYoung. Today's guest is Helen R. Murray, who is producing artistic director at American Stage. Welcome.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. It's lovely to be here.
It's a pleasure to talk to you on the day that Beauty and the Beast opens at Demon's Landing Park.
Isn't that something? This is such a huge show, so thanks for having me here.
Well, last year you did Ragtime, which I think, I don't know if it broke records, but it did really well.
It did okay, actually. It did not do really well, but it did do well. Just, you know,
Well, the people who were in it told me that it was packed all the time.
It was. I mean, here's the thing. It is packed. We'd love to see it double packed. How about that?
Okay. Well, Ragtime, the reason I brought that up is because Terrence McNally's Ragtime is not exactly, it's not Mamma Mia, you know,
right,
it's
right,
not the big
right.
crowd pleaser. And then I heard that it did really well, and I thought, well, that's cool. Beauty and the Beast kind of fills that role, doesn't it?
It does. You know, Disney had not been done in the park by American Stage yet, so this was my first season that I was programming myself, and I wanted to also make it a family-friendly affair. And yeah. I don't know that I'll do that every year, but mm-hmm. I really did want to bring something to park that could celebrate our community in a really, you know, big arms open kind of way. And so I thought Beauty and the Beast would be the perfect one. And also, Belle is just one of those princesses I really can get behind.
Yeah.
And so, you know, she's really smart. She is the savior of that story. She's not rescued. She does the rescuing all the way throughout. And so I just thought, what a great icon to put on stage and what a great message to send to our community.
Well, there's so many things that sort of encompasses in the way that you program and things that I want to talk about. But it opens tonight, April 5th, and runs through, do you remember?
It runs into early May. So it runs for 5 weeks, folks.
You do 5 weeks of the park shows.
We do. And so please come out and see us. We run Wednesday through Sunday in the evenings, and it's just such a fun time. You can get your concessions. You can also buy a light-up rose. So when the magic happens and Belle breaks the spell, you can light up your own rose.
You're giving away the ending.
No. Right, because nobody knows what happens.
Yeah, it runs April 5th, which is today, through May 5th, there in the park. And you can we're going to get this out of the way right now. It's AmericanStage.org is where you get your tickets and find out all about Beauty and the Beast. Do you have to say Disney's when you say the title?
You do. It's because it is Disney's Beauty and the Beast. So, yes.
As opposed to, like, Truffaut's Beauty and the Beast?
Yeah, or I guess the original.
Or Hitchcock's, yeah. Okay.
Yes, this is Disney's Beauty and the Beast.
The director is someone named Kenny Moten, who I don't know that I know. Who's that?
Kenny is an amazing director. We first worked together when I was running the Aurora Fox in Denver. He and I first collaborated together on Carolina Change, was the first musical he directed for me. And he also, I worked with him multiple times throughout. He directed Black Nativity. He directed Freaky Friday, the musical. I mean, the guy is so good at what he does. When I have a massive show that needs someone who can control what, I mean, it's called Beauty and the Beast, but the show is a beast. You need someone who can tame it. And Kenny is, he's just an all-star. And he comes with Jess Hinsley, who's the choreographer. They work as a team a lot. I've worked with both of them multiple times. So I was really excited to bring that team here to work. And then Jeremy Silverman is our music director, and he's just been such an all-star. I mean, incredible with the cast and the band.
Last year's show was Ragtime, mm-hmm. which was part of the season that you inherited when
Correct.
You came in.
Yeah.
So this is your first, this is the Helen R. Murray Park show. And we don't really want to say it that way.
I would say that the writers of that would probably have an issue with calling it mine.
Yeah,
but.
Yeah, and all the people who work on it.
Exactly.
Wait a minute.
Yeah, exactly.
So, what kind of decision making goes into not programming? We're going to talk about that in a minute. But this show, you were saying that you wanted a big family experience.
Yeah.
So in other words, you don't do Waiting for Godot in the park, right?
I don't know how that would sell.
Yeah.
I mean, let's face it. There is a big facet of park that is about will it sell and will it sell really big?
Oh sure.
Because it is wildly expensive to put on and has never paid for itself.
Mm.
And so I think people have an assumption about our park shows that we're making tons of money on them, and that is nowhere near the truth. This has really been a service that American Stage continues to provide to the community at a loss every year. So we're having to make up those funds in many different ways. So yeah, it does. I would love to close the gap and programming something that our community will feel represented in many different ways and that has a nostalgia to it, that also has a story that they feel comfortable having a beautiful night air show, you know, we'll get behind. All of those things are reasons that went into Beauty and the Beast. And it was something about the idea of community that really wrapped around the entire season and about how we hold our community closer. And one of those things for me is that we talk a lot about diversity in programming, but one of the things that seems to slip through the cracks when we talk about diversity of programming is that kids make up a huge part of our community. And they tend not to be the target of main stage shows. They tend to be the ones that we give our TYA, we give our tour, they'll go to the schools, or we do the little one-offs here and there. And so to do something that says we have the entire community there, including kids, is really important to me. And so you're going to see as I move forward, there will be one show every season that I consider a family-friendly piece that is great for both the parents and the kids. And so this year it happened to be the Park Show. It won't always be the Park Show.
Let's talk about programming for a minute, because as you said, I mean, you do walk a line,
yeah,
razor's edge, if you will, between what you called exciting theatrical work. In an interview we did a long time ago, you want to program this, keep everybody on their toes and happy and challenged and working and doing good work. But the razor's edge is the other side. You got to put people in seats.
Yep.
You know, how do you do that? I mean, what's that walk like?
I mean, it's this crystal ball moment every year. You're really hoping you're looking into the future and getting it right. And there's no surefire anything. I've never found that to be true, that the things that I expect sometimes will do well, maybe will, but there's a lot of times that they don't. I remember one year I was still maybe I was year five as a producer and running a theater company. I programmed a really like a holiday classic. I thought, oh, that'll sell so well. It'll pay for the rest of the season. But the one that sold out and helped pay for the rest of the season was a world premiere about anthropomorphized birds. It was the most random thing. And you're like, I couldn't have predicted that was going to be the big seller of the year.
Well, how do you do that? You do that with puppets? Or,
No, they were literally actors acting like they were birds.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
there's a crowd pleaser.
Yeah.
So the bottom line here is that you never know.
You never know. And so what I always say is that, you know, audiences will continually tell us what they want. They're constantly saying, oh, do this show, do that show. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it's true that what they want is also what they like, but a lot of times what they want, I find that, for example, they might say, I want to see Camelot. I want to see Camelot. Do Camelot because I want to see it so badly. But what I find to be more true is that what they want is that feeling they had when they first saw Camelot. And so what we're looking for is stories, shows that will evoke that feeling, because they tend to not love it as much if it doesn't hit sort of that heart spot for them. I don't know if that's even the right – I don't know what heart spot means.
It's very Hallmark card, but
yeah.
But the idea is that Beauty and the Beast, for example, is one of those.
Mm-hmm.
Because as you say, everybody's seen the movie. Everybody knows how it ends. Everybody knows about Lumiere and Mrs. Potts and all of that stuff. But, okay, what about the other shows? I mean, I'm looking at Indecent, one that – did you direct that?
I did direct Indecent.
Which I thought was wonderful. And to me, that was kind of a bright, shining example of – what you and some of the other professional theaters around here do so well is you find something that really works. And I'd never seen it. I'd never heard of it. But I really enjoyed it. The Chinese Lady was another example of that. Like, where did this come from? So that's the line I'm talking about, though. You have to keep your people challenged, and you don't want to just do Oklahoma and Herbie the Love Bug or whatever, you know.
There's a Herbie the Love Bug for stage. Well, give me that one. I loved Herbie the Love Bug growing up.
I want to play the car.
You know, So first of all, Indecent and The Chinese Lady, I know, are not necessarily well-known to our community, but they are well-known plays within the theater community.
Okay.
So Indecent won all these awards. It was on, you know, it's been done in many, many regions. And I was sad that it hadn't been done here yet. It's such a stunning show.
It was great.
And it's all...
I'm not just blowing smoke at you. I really like that a lot.
Well, thank you. Yeah. Thank you. I patted myself on the back for that one, too. I thought it came out really well. And I have to tout not just myself, but the team on that and the actors on that were so wonderful to work with. Mm. So, it's a kudos to everybody involved on that.
Yeah.
But with things like that, what we do is we begin with discussions around what are we trying to pinpoint in are the shared experience of our community at the moment when we're programming.
Yeah.
And so a lot of that are questions about what are we currently facing. And I will say for next season, we know we're going into an election year. It's a highly stressful time for people. And so how are we responding to the moment? These are the questions that start off a lot of my discussions with my team around what are we going to program next year. And then we also look at, okay, I mean, I start off with around 80 shows on our that have been put on a list for a myriad of reasons. And we're not going to be able to speak to every issue in every group of people every single time. We're not going to be able to do that. But we do want to feel like there is a broad feeling to all the different kinds of stories we tell. And in the way we tell them, part of it is about we want audiences to feel very welcome, but also to work that elasticity of the way they think about story. Mm. And part of that is bringing in storytellers they have not been met yet. So like Paula Vogel on Indecent, or Lloyd So on The Chinese Lady, or David Yee on Acts of Faith. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, these are some of the ways in which you do that. And there was sort of this through line, like if you look at the current season, we're really looking at really brave people who braved these moments of change in life, right? And who braved oppression in so many ways. So Indecent, this idea of the censorship around them and how they were, you know, and the idea of what is indecent. What we at that point ascribed as indecent was a play on Broadway because two women were in love with each other on Broadway. That was enough to pull them off the stage and arrest them.
Well, how do you – let me stop you there, though. Going back to this sort of tightrope that mm-hmm. one walks in a way. You know, how do you know that you're not getting too socially relevant or that you're going to keep people away? Like, you know, sometimes people just want to be entertained.
True.
You know, and there's a real tightrope to walk there to run that metaphor into the ground. You know, the whole idea of diversity and we don't want to talk about your predecessor in the role. I think it leaned very heavily towards social relevance and diversity thing to the point where there were a couple of shows that people just didn't want to go see.
I mean, I did inherit that season, but I want to say I have a lot of respect for the programming of my predecessor. Mm-hmm. It's not my flavor, but it was still reaching for something I thought that was really beautiful. Mm. And to say that I trend toward that less, I think, is an unfair comparison because...
Oh, I wasn't saying that. Saying, no, not at all. I'm just saying it seemed to me that was, again, it's long in the past now. It's a little heavily weighted towards, like, I don't really want to see that. That sounds a little too relevant.
Then, you know, I would say that I'm still probably walking that same tightrope, and I probably always will. Mm-hmm. I don't shy away from telling the stories that are going to be more challenging, but I do look for the work that will bring those stories forward in a way that is not didactic or preachy or in a way that isolates or hijacks the audience. What I care about is bringing them into the story. So while I may be telling, you know, the story of censorship, I'm going to look for a show that will talk about it in a way that has humor, that has music.
Okay.
And so that there's something around it that I can A, sell to people, and B, that when they're sitting in their seats, they're not immediately off put. their minds stay engaged so that we bring them into it instead of making them feel like they're being accosted by it.
Is there a point in the career of career of someone like you, say in Fairfax or when you were at Aurora, where you finally hit a groove? I mean, are you sort of running in place for a long time? I got to make this work. Is there suddenly a point where you go, yeah, this is it. This is what I wanted to do. And did you carry that here? She's
oh
laughing.
My gosh, you ask such hard questions. Good job, reporter. Did I ever say I've hit my groove?
Have you yet, I guess?
You know what? I think if I've hit any groove, it's this. I've realized that I can really help arts organizations that I move into. Mm-hmm. That I am good at organizing, first of all. I know that sounds silly, but I am. I can come in and look at the processes of a place and the way in which it's budgeted and the way in which it's moving forward and say, I can help you really clarify roles, really clarify the process so that we are able as a company to let artistry be the leading part of what we do because everything else is in place behind it.
Yeah.
So that part I feel very comfortable in now. It's not easy to do that, and it does take quite some time. But I will say, by the time I left the Hub, which was in the D.C. area in Fairfax, mm-hmm. by the time I left there, I had really honed into what I loved to produce, what I cared about producing. And yes, I've carried that from the Fox in Aurora all the way to here. I mm-hmm. definitely do program with a love of the work. And because I do choose work, and not all of it, we're going to try to always have a balance of entertainment and challenge. But what I do look for is something that's always hard for me to quantify, but I love things like whimsy. And I like magic on stage. I mean, we go to see moments of wonder. That's why we want to see something live, because there's something that is really ephemeral in the exchange of audience and live performer. And so when we reach those moments of wonder, and that doesn't need to be a huge tech moment. It can be a line perfectly said. It can be when the audience all catches up to the story that is being told and they all go have an aha moment, right?
Right.
And so these are the things I look for, and I do feel very solidly that I'm able to recognize those pieces. So in that, I'll say I feel like I've hit my stride.
And that took time.
Of course it took time. And I still will have ones that are beautiful to me and that I don't know that we did our job in sharing with our audience. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you do hit those where the marriage of the team and the actors to the script isn't exactly what you'd hoped it would be. It was still good. I don't think I produced bad theater, but I do think that there's times where I go, oh, there was just a little bit more there to reach the magic, and we were a little bit shy of it.
You've been in this gig since, I want to say, October of 22.
Yeah.
Okay. I mean, you feel like settled is not the word I mean, but I mean, you're in a good place. I got this. The team, you work well with the team. You got a fabulous team over there.
Yeah. Yeah. I do. I really, you know, I can't give enough kudos to the people I work with. They're just mm-hmm. phenomenal. And like right now, you know, Anthony, who is my managing director, Anthony Winter Brown, what an incredible person to have by my side every day. Mm-hmm. I just, for somebody who has an artist mind, who has gotten good at leadership and has figured out how to organize and run things and produce, to have somebody with a true administrator's brain right next to you every day who makes sure that everything's running and operations are going and sure. payroll is being hit, and to just take that load off my shoulders in a way that I don't feel like I have to continually run behind and follow up on, it's such a gift. And I know that sounds silly to say out loud, but the amount of times I've watched that failure happen in organizations is many.
Yeah.
So, I mean, Anthony and a lot of people on our team are the people who make the space for art. Our Alexandria, our company manager, Ashley, my associate artistic director, Tim, and our director of production, like these people are every single day taking care of artists and making space for art. We have an amazing group of people around us for
I love that, the whole idea of everybody is focused on the same end. You know, you take your own area of expertise and you funnel it, and it really is just making the best shows you can. You haven't announced the next season yet, have you?
We are announcing April 21st.
April 21st. You do it at Park, don't you?
We used to. We're holding for a couple weeks because this year one of the shows took forever to get us the licensing agreement. And so we weren't sure we had it up until only 2 weeks ago.
Is that Waiting for Godot, the musical? Is that one? So the 21st, do you announce it at Park?
This is going to be just an online announcement. Okay. Although I will say, if you were at opening night for Park, you will get to hear what next year's Park musical is.
Any hints? You want to give us any hints at all?
It has been done at American Stage before.
Okay.
It's been quite some time, but it has been done there before. Take your guesses, people.
Yeah, think about that, folks. Yeah, email Helen over at over at American Stage. You know what? I made a whole list of questions, didn't ask most of them, and you answered them anyway.
I'm a talker, obviously.
Well, it's worked out fine. You feel like a Floridian now? How are things going with you?
You know what? I really miss the mountains, but I do feel more and more at home here. There's been, you know, I think it's just anytime you're in a new place, I'd say it takes a year or two before you really feel like, oh, this is where I live. But I've gotten so used to so many things, and I really love the Florida winters, I gotta say.
We did have a winter this year, didn't we?
We did, and I loved it much better than Colorado's winter, which is still going. I think it just snowed again this week. So.
Where are you from originally? From California?
I was born in California, yeah. But my childhood was mostly on the Big Island of Hawaii.
Wow.
Yeah. And then we hopped around the world for a long while. And then I ended up in Northern Virginia, where I went to school at Virginia Tech for college.
Theater bug bit you early, kind of thing?
It did. I don't think there was – I tried for a heartbeat in college. I thought I might – I double majored in communications with a concentration on political communications. Mm-hmm. And I think it's because I had such a crush on Aaron Sorkin. I thought, oh, I'm going to be a speech writer one day.
Oh, yeah.
But
The West Wing is still, to me, the best television
I
ever made.
I love The West Wing so much. We could probably go toe-to-toe with our trivia on it. But yeah, I did flirt with the idea of going into politics for a little bit. But I had done theater. As long as I can remember, before I even knew what theater was, really, as a child, when I'd never even been exposed to it. We lived in a fairly rural area of Hawaii when I lived there, so there wasn't a huge amount of theater to go see. So I still, at that point, I think I was probably 7 or 8 when I wrote my first play and made my sisters be in it and directed them, and I had no idea what it even was. I just wanted to do this thing.
So you've been a playwright for a while. Are you ever going to... Stuff of yours has been produced, I assume.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, okay. Have you ever thought about maybe if you put one of – is that a little presumptuous to say, hey, we're doing mine this year?
What I try to do with my writing – and I have produced my own writing before. And usually it's come because the board that I've been with has asked for it. I will say when I was at the Hub, three of my shows were in the top 10 sellers for the Hub. Right. And I don't know if that was because I was known in the area, maybe people were more interested, or maybe it's because I lived in the area. And so when I wrote things that really had the attention of that area. So I don't know what that was perfectly attributed to, but I obviously had sort of an understanding of that community. So I was writing in a way that embraced it. No, of course, you know, absolutely. It's actually in my contract. We do have a clause about doing my work there, because I do think that at some point, if it's right, sure, it can go there. I never assume that it's going to be part of a season. Every now and then, I've put a couple of my pieces in the mix so far, and I will say next season, my name will be on two pieces as part of our Beyond series. Mm-hmm. But as for main stage yet, we'll see. I'm not going to say no, but it's not how I lead with, you know.
The Beyond series and Lift Every Voice, you know, there are all sorts of ancillary.
Yeah.
Is that the right word?
Ancillary.
Yeah, uh-huh. Ancillary. Thank you. Uh-huh. Yeah, I'm supposed to be the journalist here. Aspects to what American Stage does, and including community outreach. I can't let you go without talking to you about community outreach, because that's always on the table when I talk to theater people, like taking theater out of –
right.
the main stage. I mean, is this important to you as well?
It's incredibly important to me. Mm-hmm. And this current season is the first iteration of the Beyond series and has done quite well.
Yes.
So White Rabbit, Red Rabbit was seen around town, did very well.
And you did the outdoor things.
Tales by Twilight. People loved it. They want us to – we keep – people kept asking us, when are you going to do it all year long?
Wasn't it cold out there? I remember talking with Anthony when he was doing
not
it.
Not for those actors. They were they were sweating bullets out there. Well. They really move. But yeah, it gets a little chilly, but it's fun. It's so fun, and people loved it. So we will be bringing that back next season.
That's very cool. It was great to see Boyd Hill used for something else. I used to go there when I was a kid, you know?
It's such a great partnership. And so you're going to see more Beyond programming. We have new partners coming up next season, some really cool stuff that we can't wait to share. But it comes from this thing of, like, at our main stage, there's a barrier to the main stage that, try as we might with our community outreach, we're going to keep running into, which is that some people just didn't grow up going to the theater.
Yeah.
It feels foreign to them. It feels a little bit scary to walk through our doors and to go to the theater. And so I'm looking for ways that we can bring theater on the road, yes.
Yeah.
But it's bigger than that. It's about partnering with different people and companies and entities in the area, because that partnership cross-pollinates both of our audiences. Yeah. And then beyond that, it shows people that theater has many kinds of iterations and adaptations. And so for many, it's more comfortable for them to come to Boyd Hill or to come to the Savant or to come to, you know, any of the many places.
Your house. Yeah. Your backyard. Hey.
I have done salon theater before in people's homes. And guess what? After a little bit, they're like, we really don't want strangers knowing where we live. So I don't know that we're going to be doing that.
Yeah, perfection takes many forms.
Yes, yeah. Yes. But Beyond is going to get bolstered. And so you guys will be seeing more of it. And it will get creative and weird and funny and awesome.
Oh, yeah. Those are all words that I subscribe to. That's very cool. Helen R. Murray is producing artistic director of American Stage, which is opening Beauty and the Beast, Disney's Beauty and the Beast, tonight at Demon's Landing, and it runs through May 5th. You can find out more about the show at AmericanStage.org. Get your tickets. Park is always a big deal, and it's to me, it means spring is here.
I love that. Love that. And I also just want to say, as one last plug before we go, we're offering two musicals this year. So right after, if you don't want to do the family-friendly one, come in for the more naughty one and see Hedwig and the Angry Inch.
Oh, which you're doing Hedwig. That's right.
Which is right afterward. And in its final week, Hedwig is moving to Janice
to
Live.
Janice Live.
Part of our Beyond programming.
I do remember this.
Yeah. And so it's just going to be a wild ride. So go see the family-friendly musical, Beauty and the Beast, opening tonight. And then go see right after it, Hedwig and the Angry Inch, a true rock musical.
It is so bizarre and so cool.
It is
I've
such
seen
a
it
cool
a couple
piece.
Of times. Yeah. So the Janice Live thing, there's let's close with this, another example of outreach.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And it's just so they've been great. We're really excited to do this and see how it goes and see if maybe there's a place for us there again in the future. So, yeah, folks, lots of really exciting stuff coming up at American Stage. Please join us.
Helen R. Murray from American Stage, thank you so very much.
Thank you.
Always a pleasure speaking with you. And break a leg, hey?
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me today.